Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what's a podcast?
A podcast is a thing humans invented to procrastinate from doing important things, like actual work or spending time with their families.
Neat. Enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 17, Season 2, Episode 3, Team Cockroach, directed by Morgan Sackett, written by Dan Schofield, and including guest cast Tia Sirkar, Rebecca Hazelwood, and Joanna Sotomura. Michael attempts to convince the humans to be on his side, and to keep his ruse from Sean and Vicky, he tells them he can get them to the real good place. Michael gets Chidi and Jason on his side, and Tahani is hesitant until he shows her her death at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Eleanor plans to flee to Mindy's until Michael reveals that Chidi agreed to help her in each reboot, but only on the condition that Michael joins them for ethics classes. The neighborhood is fake rebooted with Vicky playing the top point getter and mayor. My guests today are composer David Schwartz, editor Matt Freund, and Good Place writer's assistant Lizzie Pace. Lizzie, David, and Matt, welcome. Everything is great.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you so much. Lizzie, you've been in the room for every single podcast, and I think this is the first we're hearing from you.
I have. So it's very exciting.
Are you just full to the brim with things that you want to correct me on?
Yeah. Okay. This is already going pretty badly.
Oh, really?
I gotta say.
Oh, no. Yeah. In a sense, this episode is almost the season two pilot sort of thing, right? Like we had the two-banger that that got us started, and then we undid all of that with Dance Dance Resolution. This, what is effectively the third episode in the season, really is kind of a reset, right? This outlines a new game.
Yeah, it's starting a new trajectory for the season. You might think, oh, we're going to see them play this out in like a ton more reboots. People right. might be sad about that because they don't get any more fun restaurant names, but... We go back to Froyo. But yeah, I think this season was definitely Michael's arc. And so we see the start of that here. He's not on their side, but he's moving in that direction. You see that he's going to be forced to take ethics classes and perhaps understand more what the humans are going through.
He's maybe not on their side, but he certainly needs them or has realized that he needs them in a way that I don't think was apparent before, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
David, let's talk about the music. How does it, you composed the theme to The Good Place, is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Who talked to you first? Have you worked with Mike Shore before?
No, I hadn't worked with anyone on the show. It was really different and interesting. And
had you ever played music before?
Once.
Okay.
Junior high, clarinet.
Sure.
I was the first kid out of the clarinet class. That's true.
Is that true?
Then I went on to other instruments where I did slightly better. But, I got a call from my agent, which is, not the way it usually happens, but just these guys want to go meet you. And I knew nothing. And it was go meet you today, I think, or tomorrow, whatever. It was quick.
Wow.
And I went in and there's sort of like this many people and there's me. And, there are the
there's
interviewers.
There's 100 people in the room right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. 100.
Six or seven.
You know our producers, intimidating bunch. And they're all asking me questions. And they were asking me mainly about Deadwood. So I was really confused. I did the theme for Deadwood and they wanted stories about David and and how that theme came about. So I said, this is a comedy, right? They said, yeah, but we don't care about that. It's right. Very Mike Schur kind of thing. We don't care about that. Just tell us about Deadwood.
Right.
So I did what I could remember. And then we talked about where we lived, and it turns out David Miner lives on my block. So
it was
great. And I have to see him walk his dog all the time now. He's a friendly guy. I have to see him walk his dog.
Hollywood's a very small town. So
he won't come to the studio. I keep on inviting him. He says, yeah, that would be great.
Is your studio here on the lot?
No, it's on my lot, in the back of my lot.
Oh, at your house?
At my house, yeah. It's a separate building behind my house, a few short steps from David Miner's house. We probably shouldn't be saying that, but...
Well, I wouldn't give the address. I mean, you can. We'll cut it. So, did they commission you then to write this?
Interesting, again. You know, usually you go in for these meetings, and, you know, earlier on in my career, I'd go like, yeah, I got it. You know, they're acting like I got it. And they were hard to read, and I left. And I think by the time I got back, I got a call from my agent, and she said, do they want you to do it? And I go, what? And they go, like, The Good Place. I said, oh, that's amazing. I really want to do it, because I was just intrigued by the show, intrigued by the people. And another thing they said to me early on that should be included was, we really don't use music. We don't like it very much. Mm-hmm. The best you'll ever hear from us is, yeah, that's okay. That's fine.
They're not going to
get excited.
Get excited about notes.
And I feel we've gotten way past that. Even in the pilot, you know, I forget it was either Drew or Mike who said, we really love the music. So that was a big hurdle for me to get there.
In that instance, they're talking about scoring, right? Which you always also do on the show.
Right. I don't see really a difference, too. The theme is just one part of the score.
Okay.
And to me, they're similar.
Interesting.
But usually a composer these days, if you go for the interview, it's usually followed up by writing a score as a demo.
Okay.
And to submit, and they might have a number of people do it. It might be the whole show, or it might be just a scene. Or
would it be unusual to compose the theme to a program and not move on to score it, or does that happen as well?
I've done that. It's usually I do both, but it depends. Sometimes if you do it in genres where they use Who songs, for instance, then you don't get to write the theme.
Unless you happen to have been in the Who.
Had a lot of songs. The shows that had big songs or shows. So usually I write the theme.
To talk briefly about the theme, it's an A. Mm-hmm. It's in 3-4 or 6-8.
Excellent.
Which?
I'm glad you remember the key.
I do.
Yes, it's in 3-4.
Okay. And it's brief. Why is it a waltz? Why is it
Now you've totally thrown me. Do you have perfect pitch, or were you playing
along? No, I've sat down and figured out how to play it.
Nice. I just thought there was something lilting and inviting about it. You're talking about the 3-meter about it.
Right? I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest thing was, can you write a theme? It's going to be 5 seconds.
Is that what they said?
Yeah.
5 seconds?
Holy cow. We've got a card. It's 5 seconds. And so I really wanted something memorable. So that was my goal. I think we might have stretched to almost 7 because we go into the show.
How dare you?
You know, and...
How indulgent. 7 seconds.
And at the last minute, I replaced the sample oboe. I tried to have everything real where I could.
Oh, it's not an English horn? It's an oboe?
It's an oboe.
Okay.
And Chris Bleth played it, and he did a fantastic job. And that was really last second. And I don't even think I ever told the producers, I'm replacing this with a real one. But they just said, that sounds good. And that was, we moved on. But so
they were true to their claim that they weren't going to lavish you with praise.
Right. No, they're good on that now.
Oh, my goodness.
And the real test of the show was doing the initiation scene where Michael's talking and bringing everyone in front of the screen. Maybe there's a better word for it. But because that was really tough. And they had tried everything to temp with it before I came in.
To lay out the premise of there are points and you can lose some and you can gain some.
It's like a minute and a half or something. It's a long scene for this show. And it had to have music that it was like sort of the first thing everyone was going to hear. And I think, and I don't usually do this, I presented them 10 different ways.
Wow.
None of which they liked, but they liked... that's wrong. They liked some part of everyone. And it sort of, in the end, became a sort of merging and mashup of those different ideas.
Very interesting. Matt, you've been with the show since season 2, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
And is editing this show different than it is for other television programs?
Slightly different sometimes. Mike has a unique process of working where he likes to work in the order of the episodes.
Okay.
And he doesn't really like to, and also he doesn't start in post really, really digging into the episodes until production is finished.
Oh, wow.
Which is really nice for us in post because it gives us plenty of time to get through our cuts. We're not typically working on 2 episodes at the same time.
I guess in that sense, describe your job. So you we shoot things on a soundstage or on a location, and you get handed what? Media in the form of cards or something?
Yeah, well, me personally, I am pretty fortunate in the way we set up our project in that I get a script that's broken down just like a normal script you'd see for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But every single line is broken down in a dot that I can click on and play back that line instantly.
Really?
Which is nice for editing, but it's even better for when there are producers or directors in the room and they go like, can we just see this other take of this line? And you just click it and you show them all four takes in a row and it's really fast.
So who's done that before you get it?
The assistant editor does that. Yeah.
And are these, there's a script supervisor named Valeria, and has she sort of put an asterisk near things or numbered things and said, this is the director's preferred one? Or
occasionally, but not really. And I don't actually, this is bad to confess, but I don't pay much attention to
that's not
to
bad
that,
to confess. That's why we're doing this podcast.
That's what the podcast is for.
Yeah. You know, I just watch all the takes and I kind of just go with what I like the most.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. But the director has their 2 days to come in and work on the episode. So if they had something really particular in mind that they wanted, then they come in, they change it.
Do you get dailies every day? Do you get?
Yeah, every day they're shooting, we get the previous day's footage.
And then you work on that?
Yes.
And you sort of comp together what you think should be in there, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting.
So I start, you know, if I have a whole scene, I'll read the scene again. I've read the script already.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll read the scene again, and then I'll just start and try to go from there to...
So if I'm directing the episode Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. the following week... I come in with you and I sit for 2 days. And you've got it pretty much done, right?
Yes.
And then I go, you know, there was a take that we did that was more interesting from this perspective. And you go find that by clicking on your dots.
Exactly. Yeah.
And are able to insert that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all broken down by, you know, they typically shoot three cameras on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's broken down like, you know, first it'll be a wide shot.
Size.
And yeah, it'll be the size. It'll start typically widest and then go into closer. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you kind of know in the script where everything is. It's pretty fast and nice.
It's got to be different than other shows, too. Even things unique to this program, like the magicking in and out of a Janet and mm-hmm. things in her hand and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You're too young to remember the show Bewitched. but I feel like on that...
I remember Bewitched. Okay.
I feel like on that show, they would make all the actors freeze and they'd run her in or run her out. And then everybody would continue and you could 100% feel it.
See it and feel the cut. Yeah. And this show, it's unique in that they do it across the cut where, you know, you start to hear the Janet ding before it happens and then, but you cut right as that happens and then she's there, which is really clever and smart. It's a fun, you know, it always makes it like a surprising, funny moment when she appears or disappears. So,
mm-hmm. Lizzie, you mentioned your disappointment with the restaurant names. We do get a couple of good ones in this episode. A little bit chowder now, as well as pump up the clam. Are those straight Megan Amram again?
Megan is not the only person who pitches puns on it. You know, it's a team effort, but she does have a compulsion and can't stop
she has a
doing
problem,
it.
Right?
And she has, has like a real problem where she literally will keep doing 50 more and we'll move past that point in the script and then she'll keep pitching them until Mike tells her to stop. He actually has pictures he's taken of himself with signs up that say Megan stop, Jen stop, and Joe stop, I believe. Because
oh, really?
They,
he has to say it so frequently to them.
That he just puts the picture up on the screen. Yeah.
This is when they're sitting at the 14 monitors with one keyboard? Is
yes.
That,
okay. So everyone can see it. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. David, who else is in this department? I noticed that you have a music by credit on this as well. Is that because of scoring? What's a music supervisor? What's a music editor?
Well, music editor comes from my team, the great Jason Newman, who started out when he moved to town in my studio. And I said, you know, you should try this music editing thing. And now just look at any TV credit. It's him. He's doing them all. He's really successful because he's so good. It's just like part of the team. You know, he knows where all the music is. He can edit when we're on the stage. And so this worked great. But, you know, here we're sort of conflicting with sound effects and what can we do here? And that's the kind of stuff that happens on the stage. Plus, you know, after we meet and spot, which is I get together with Mike and the producers and we just go through the scene. I may be seeing it for the first time. Hopefully I get to see the whole show the night before. And we start at the beginning and we decide, well, we should have music here.
So the edit's locked at that point. Is that right?
Usually.
Yeah,
this show's better than almost all about that. We pretty much locked at that
pretty
point.
Much.
Some shows are come to you and they're like, we think this is it, but we may change it 100 times.
No, we know it's liquid and it's going to change 100 times.
Okay.
You know, that's something that's come with the, you know, the great advantage of modern technology. It comes with the fact that it can always be changed. If somebody has a better idea, they'll insert it at that point.
But wait, are you saying that you hope to get it the night before so that you can kind of strategize some things that you want to play? And then are you performing it for people? How does it work?
No, I just want to know what the show is so that I'm not seeing it for the first time. So I'm not so lost in the show that I can't think, well, you know, what can I offer?
Okay.
And then we discuss it and we go through it. And Jason's there writing everything down. I prefer not to take the notes myself because I'm not that multitask coordinated.
What do the notes look like? Are you saying
they're Google Doc?
Okay,
and they just say where we come in, where we start. You know what? I really want. You know, I'd rather that Mike just the emotions that he's want. Not, you know, this should be sad music. This should be minor music. That doesn't help me as much as like, you know, like it's getting a little heavy here. How can we lighten this up?
Oh, okay.
That's look at this a different way. You know, we already have the funny on the screen. What can we do? Because this is coming up. And so we'll really discuss, you know, different options. And then it's still an abstract thing because I got to go back and write music. And even what I say is different when I start to put notes against picture. That mm-hmm. still amazes me. And, you know, I might pitch it another way or give them two different options so that they can pitch it the way we discussed it in the room. But also here, I think this might work better.
I noticed in this episode, there's not a bed under everything. Mm-hmm. Like plenty of it's very spare, right? Plenty of it's empty of score. Early on in this episode, Michael's pitching the plan, sort of when we continue from the previous episode, Michael's saying like, here's the deal, we need to team up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you are offering it a little bit of urgency. Like there's sort of a pizzicato string kind of appreciated, like almost a ticking, like doop, doop. Do,
right.
do kind of thing. You're trying to convey that there's we have to get there, right? Like
right. Time is moving, time is ticking in that way. I don't know if I thought that literally about it. But yeah, I wanted the urgency, but also an anxiety behind it and some tension.
And then when you
and that's the fine line. I don't mean to interrupt,
but please.
This show is all about finding that fine line between dark and light. And not just in my department, obviously.
Sure. You know,
it's not a heavy dark drama, but and it's a comedy, but you know, it has serious moments.
Oh, it's a comedy with very high stakes.
Did you know the ending?
No, I still don't know anything, basically.
Oh, you should watch the show. I think you'd really enjoy it.
No, we were before it came up. I think the episode before we were called in posted to let us know.
Wow. Lizzie, this is a show with that's super stupid and very heavy.
Hey.
I mean, you know this. These are conversations that you guys must have too, right? In the room to talk about like, oh, it's getting heavy here, or here's a chunk of like, we're speaking a lot of philosophy, so we need to move it on.
That actually comes up a lot.
It's got it, right? Like it can't be a lecture.
Yeah, we try to, especially after the table read, you know, you go through and you check off if things are getting laughs or not. And if there's a big area where no one's laughing, it's like, we can't forget that this is a comedy show. And
once David finishes his score, are you the ones to insert it then, Matt?
Usually the assistant editors will cut it in.
Okay.
Because it's all timed out perfectly to the episode that's locked. And and then the music editor will sometimes go in on the stage if we need to fix something. And for me, music, I guess my relation to music is that when I do my cut of the episode, I will use temp music, which is the score from previous seasons of the show.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, to try to give the feel that we want for the scene. And then when we do our spotting session, we'll go through every single cue that I've put in and we'll go, oh, we don't really want that actually. Or we like that, let's keep it, or let's do a slight variation.
You guys do an incredible job. Matt and Eric are uncannily good at temping, which can be intimidating, but even though it's my music, which is also—
Yeah, we have good source material.
Well, you know, they're putting my music in there and I go, oh, I wouldn't have used it that way, but that's really good. I wish I had thought of that.
Define spotting session.
Okay. Spotting session is we sit in the edit bay with David, me, Mike Scher, sometimes Morgan Sackett, the producer, and Jason music Newman, editor.
Music editor and the sound
and
supervisor.
And sound supervisor who's
more spotting Foley and effects and
okay.
different sound effects.
Yeah, and I put timecode up on the screen and we sit there with like all of the cues for ADR, basically mm-hmm. all of the cues for music, and we play down the episode and then we just start and stop whenever there's a music cue.
Oh, interesting.
And we let it play through and then we'll stop and we'll talk about it for a little bit.
And after that, how long, once you sort of have an idea of what you're after, how long before a completed track, whether it's 2 seconds or a minute and a half, is due?
Well, it's usually the whole show is due. So okay. It's pretty much usually around a week to deliver.
Is that a lot? Is that not enough?
It's kind of standard, but it means I'm working 7 days usually.
Wow.
It's really much faster than that because there's a review process too. So Mike really likes to hear it, and usually I either come back again or we'll send it all over in quick times. And Mike's incredibly decisive. I don't know if he is in all your departments, but you know he certainly is brilliant, and he knows what he wants, and he can express it very easily. He said, well, this is great, but this is just wrong, and you know, in a nice way, and then you have a place to go from there. So it really gets turned around twice.
I have 1,000 more questions, but before we do that, let's listen to a clip from this week's episode.
How many different versions of this place have we been through?
Let's see, 802. The longest one was 11 months. This current one has only been going for 1 week. Boy, you guys barely know each other. That's gonna make this tough.
What's that super tiny line?
That's the shortest one, 8 seconds. It was a butt reboot. I sat on the activator by mistake.
Michael, was I also rebooted 802 times?
Yes. Why?
Every time a Janet is rebooted, she increases her social awareness and abilities. I might be the most advanced Janet in the universe.
Huh. So, Janet isn't with you?
No. There has to be a Janet in every neighborhood, good and bad. This one is an actual good place Janet that I stole to help sell the roof.
I guess it didn't work, though, because you keep failing.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
If you're not human, why do you look like us?
Everyone in the Bad Place Bureau of Human Affairs gets randomly assigned a human body so we can get the feel of how best to torture you. I gotta say, it took me a long time to get used to the hanging bits.
Gross.
Oh, get your mind out of the gutter, Eleanor. I was talking about my testicles.
Find full episodes of The Good Place on NBC.com and the NBC app. It bears mentioning that at the beginning of that clip, it's not surgery without anesthesia happening in the other room. It's Jason running around with a sparkler that you hear. It sounds like pain. It's him having the best time ever. Now let's talk about Ted's testicles. this lays it out. This is a scene where we see those failures. It's fun to remember some of the 802 from the previous episode. What's the total runtime of what's the target number for the length of a show?
I believe it's 2130.
Okay.
I think.
What are the first cuts?
But the first cuts, okay, so it's interesting. Like, yeah, the first cuts last year were coming in, for me, they were coming in around 30 minutes long.
That's super long.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
so that's your long. Cut or the director's cut?
That's my cut. And usually it doesn't change on this show, at least between the director's cut and the editor's cut lengthwise, mm-hmm. because Mike likes to see everything and everyone right. knows that. So.
But that's like 50% too long. I mean, that's not just taking out breaths and stuff.
Yeah.
Are you excising story? Talk about that.
Oh, definitely. And this is actually what you're talking about, Mike being really quick and smart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is where his brilliance really shines in the edit room, is that he can watch a scene and he immediately knows, oh, we'll just cut out this 30-second chunk. And I'm like, whoa, like how does that work? Oh, wait, yeah, that does work. That's amazing. That's perfect.
Because you would think it would influence,
yeah.
like you would need that for later, that having been set up.
Yeah, you would feel like, I mean, sometimes there's like a small joke in it or something where you're like, you get precious with these things
and
you don't want to lose them. And yeah, and sometimes there is something that you feel like could be a story moment, but it's really not that important. The story doesn't change that much if you lose those beats. So I don't know.
Can you remember your favorite joke that's been cut?
My favorite joke.
That's been cut.
Right. I might come back to that.
You have think about so that you for a have little bit. A, I mean, yeah. You both have knowledge of things that the universe doesn't know about The Good Place. Like, there's a whole shadow Good Place on NBC that no one's...
Well, we do release extended cuts of the episodes.
I wanted to ask about that. I learned about that from fans on Twitter. Like, because when it comes out on Hulu or Netflix or something, they're longer, right?
They are, yeah. Sometimes they range from like 30 seconds to some, I think, maybe 2 minutes longer. Because there's a lot of good stuff. And when it airs on NBC, it has to be to time.
Right.
So, yeah. So as we're editing the episode and cutting it down, Mike will go, we'll save that piece for the extended cut. I like that. Like, so as I'm working and as we're making cuts, I always keep a folder that just has like little sequences of lines. Every single line that gets cut out, I save. And every, you know, I just
But in the extended cut, it's it feels just like an episode, right? It's not something tacked on.
Right. Like no. Yeah, because it's, we start with something that's way too long and then we cut it down and down and down. And the whole time we're cutting it, it still feels like an episode of the show. It's not like a Frankenstein thing that we're shoving this line in later, you know, because it was.
Vicky saying, I will survive longer and the extended
cut. Oh, that was much longer. Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah. So you got to hear more of her singing, I will survive. See how valuable that is?
Was that done practically? I noticed that she was using a mic that was actually a UHF transmitter.
Okay. It's all practical.
Wow. Good for her. Well done, Tia Sirkar. We introduce a plot point in this. It's sort of discovered by Janet herself that given the 802 reboots, she just might be the most advanced Janet of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to open up the world for story and for her relationships. And in as much as Michael has more to do in this season than he may have in season one, we see that play out a little bit with Janet.
It definitely is an important part for what happens later in the season when she learns how to lie, and she's maybe learning some sort of emotion type thing. It's very confusing. We really tried to stay away from like a robot learns to love,
right?
And so tried to do it in a unique way where it's like, oh,
a Derek
she's
way.
Just becoming more advanced.
Yeah,
and yeah, that might play into the future season three.
Describe everything about season three.
So they're underwater.
See, we've joked about this, and it's so uncomfortable because anything is possible.
They're in an Atlantis type situation.
Came up,
and
in a,
Derek is the king. Yeah, I think is that what he pitched.
You're the only person that's safe enough to joke about it because you actually know that we're not going to touch it. Nobody else sitting here at this table,
as far as I know, we're still on 312. So we'll see.
David, you mentioned having. Thinking of the theme just as another, like, are you thinking of this as a symphony, or like, is the theme just the overture to an episode?
It can be. I don't know if I'm ever that kind of thinker. I just sort of see something in front of me. I think of notes, or I put my hand down and then this note starts to attract me and it builds into something. And I don't analyze it while I'm doing it or afterwards. Maybe I should.
Change nothing.
I will say that I'm always trying to advance the story. And if I will go back and saying, oh, this is a really fun piece of music, but it's so wrong. Let's start again.
You have inadvertently or otherwise described Mike Shore's process for coming up with names. He says he just sits at a keyboard and starts typing letters.
Right.
And then you wind up with Shellstrop. But do you have like an orchestra in your mind? Like, a lot of it seems to be strings and sort of staccato, and then there are flowing. I feel like there's cello throughout. Are there themes to this, the instrumentation, the voicing of things, but also does Michael have a theme? Does Eleanor have a theme? Is it that sort of thing in your mind?
Well, there are Eleanor themes for sure. And there are probably ones that we've used with Michael more. And there's a cheaty love theme.
Oh, really?
Eleanor. Yeah, it's just the first time we see them together. And then, you know, Mike said, let's use this here. And then, well, it's not the cheaty love theme anymore because we just happened to work in another spot.
Okay.
So I don't know if we're that precious about it. But one thing I really love about the show, and I've done a lot of shows, which I also love the other way too, where, oh, your music is the kitchen sink, everything. You know, here it's reggae. Here there's an orchestra. Here there's a big band. Can we do some electronic music? And then the challenge in those kind of shows for me, I'm talking about different series, is still making them sound like they're coming from the identity of that show and me, which somehow works its way out. But I was really thrilled about this because I felt when I met the producers, this was going to have a palette.
Palette was the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Wow. I found a word. That's really good for me.
I mean, you do this for a living and are great at it. And no, but, a palette of instruments, a palette of textures and voices.
I sort of like when I was writing those 10 initial themes for the initiation scene, well, this worked, this didn't work. You know, and sometimes still to this day, I'll say, well, I'm getting tired of this palette and I'll put this instrument in, and it just doesn't work.
By and large, when you're scoring the show, are you writing it on a computer using voice patches, and then do real people play it, as you mentioned with the oboe, or is it all within Logic or some application?
Pretty much. I use the competitor to Logic, Digital Performer.
Okay.
Which nobody uses anymore. Nobody okay. does it. That's what makes it unique now. And I sometimes use Pro Tools too.
Sure.
And I won't say my thoughts about Logic. but I usually sit down at a keyboard. Sometimes I sit down at a ukulele or a guitar or a piano, or, you know, as opposed to, you know, electronic keyboard, mm-hmm. My real piano. So yeah, sometimes, because you just need to sort of jar your brain. So I'll pick up a different instrument. It may not even end up on that instrument. There's something I might write on a sort of guitar-based instrument or a mandolin, comes out differently. And as much as I can within the time period, I try to put real musicians to add to it. You know, either play the written parts or on top of it. It can go either way.
And these, they would come to your home and record there?
Yes, my studio in my home.
Your studio. I'm not.
They're not in the bedroom, guessing. But they used to be. but there's one who has to go to be mentioned, the great George Dearing, who works with everyone. And I think if George ever retired, scoring would really change for the worse in this town. You know, I lose him, you know, a couple of months a year to big Tom Newman movies. And he goes, oh, gee, well, let's see. I have Tom Monday and I have Tom Tuesday and I have Tom. George, you're telling me you can't do it. Just say
right.
it, you know.
It's okay.
And he's so nice. And he's like a scoring machine. I shouldn't admit how much he adds, but he does. He's just really fantastic. He doesn't just play guitar. He just sort of like looks the picture and knows what to add and plays all different kinds of instruments. So I try to get him first.
Do you, that makes me think, do you hear dialogue as music? Like, are you playing counterpoint to the words being spoken, the things not spoken?
Very much so. And I've been known to really annoy my sound engineers by never turning it off. You know, they go, I'm going to turn off the dialogue so I can mix this. I said, no, that's the lead instrument.
Wow.
Yeah, everything else is counterpoint to that.
How cool.
And I started my first television show, which came out of nowhere, and I had no idea how to do it, but I was very fortunate. It was Northern Exposure.
Oh, wow.
Which was, you know, dialogue the whole time. It has some similarities to this show and a sort of this benign universe, you know,
yeah.
and these quirky characters, and it's not the most dark place, but bad things happen too. And so I learned to do it, and literally learned to do it because I didn't have a clue. But one thing I always knew, that dialogue was going to rule.
Lizzie, we see Tahani's death for the first time, which is sort of remarkable to think that we've made it this far into the show without having seen it. And I love that by way of torturing her even further, not only is she once again in the shadow of Camilla, her sister, but like when she confronts her, she's like at her worst point. She had to sneak in dressed as a waitress or something.
Oh, for sure. And it's in Cleveland, which I think is the most grating part for her. We had a lot of fun coming up with what really would bring her over to Michael's side if she has that moment where she really realizes, oh, I'm this kind of monster person, actually.
I love that that's her moment of outrage, is saying, I died in Cleveland. Like that's the part that stands out for her. Have we seen everybody else's deaths?
We had seen everyone, I think, except Tahani in season one.
It's so
one.
Weird that I yeah. like that. Yeah. I didn't even notice that.
I didn't think of that till
now. Yeah, very interesting. Now let's hear from one of our completely real sponsors. Promotional consideration is furnished by.
Do you suffer from seasonal allergies? Are you sick of the sneezing, coughing, itchy eyes, sinus headache, or chronic night fatigue? You may need Nasapro. For possible relief of allergy symptoms, as well as potentially curing a bunch of other stuff. When used in conjunction with several prescription medications that have been proven to work, Nasapro has the potential to work. It is not technically medicine, but it is technically chalk. Don't ask your doctor about Nasapro, just take it. What's the worst that can happen? Nasapro. Pretty good for a not medicine.
So, Mark, I feel like I should take this opportunity to ask you a few questions.
Oh, boy, here we go.
I wanted to know, what has been the most surprising part of working on this podcast for you?
How much work it is. it was surprising to me to learn, because I think this was a childhood dream, that it could be your job to watch TV. But rewatching these episodes, like there's actually work involved in podcasts. I think I thought all my friends who had a podcast before were just, you know, goofing around. And to get into the room and in the seat, you should be prepared.
How do you prepare? Are you on the Reddit thread?
What's a Reddit?
Oh God.
I don't understand the internet. This Google Doc that Grant sends me a couple days before each time is the extent of my technological capability. I was one time was in the Google Doc typing, and Lizzie, you were also typing, and it freaked me out.
Oh, I'm
do you know
so
what I mean?
Sorry.
Right. She took over.
I could see it said like Lizzie Pace, and then letters started appearing,
yeah,
and
I
it seems
very
like sorcery.
Fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't mean to intimidate you. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Lizzie, now it's my turn.
Okay.
You're in the writer's room. Your job title is what?
I am the writer's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what my job is, I'm kind of like a court stenographer, but for like poop jokes. But basically I take notes for the writers when they are talking about things. They're on story or they're pitching jokes.
Okay.
Which is a debatable percentage of the day.
It's not 100%, right?
It's not 100%, no.
The writer's room is a bit of a dorm, right? Like it feels
yes.
collegey to me.
Yes, you're trapped with all these people there all day.
Yeah.
And all of the smells and people's tics. And I know what every single person does, like when they're bored. Like some of the writers make little creepy art projects, like Dylan makes these creepy little art things.
It's essential you describe what you're talking about because our minds are reeling.
They look like they're like pot holders. They're definitely not pot holders, but he made one recently.
Was thinking. Not at all.
They're like things that you can make out of index cards.
Okay.
And Josh made a picture that's of a sunset and he just puts it up on the wall and he just sometimes looks out at it like it's a window. We have no windows.
You're describing an asylum.
Yeah,
you have a
it's
windowless
very similar.
Room?
It's very really? Similar
there's
to
no
an asylum. Yeah, no, there's no windows. Just that sunset.
I just want to bring one point because the first time I heard writer's assistant, I assumed it was a writer.
Yeah, that's what most people assume.
And that person had an assistant. You are the writer's assistant for a giant
14.
Yeah, a gaggle
yeah,
of
we
writers.
We have 14
right?
writers. We have a script coordinator who's Tyler, who is fantastic. And he actually wrote an episode on season 2.
Yeah.
He sometimes makes these things called keeks, which I feel like are important to discuss, he takes all the writers' faces and then makes them say things in his own accents that kind of cut them down to the core. Like for Mike, it was something about like, I love baseball or something like that. And
like
Mike
was like a Jib Jab video where like their chin moves?
It is. Yes. He has like, yeah, it moves one,
right.
one direction.
Like a
yeah.
South Park, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes Mike will be like, Tyler, make a keek for that. And so there's a lot of weird stuff on the internet. We have a...
Oh, yeah? Go on. Do tell.
We have an account for the room. I won't say what it is, but it makes comments on YouTube on various things.
I will talk with you.
Oh,
afterwards.
And we have a writer's PA, Dana, and she is lovely, and she gets lunch, and she basically runs the whole office.
In this episode, the four humans have to have a couple of huddles, a couple of gaggles to go and decide whether or not they're going to team up with Michael. In one hilarious element, Kristen Bell climbs across the ledge into her bedroom and Michael reveals that was just another element of the torture and he reveals the stairs. But this is an opportunity for all these four characters to express their misgivings and what they're worried about.
With Michael.
Yes.
Yes, it definitely is. And I think my favorite one is Jason, where he's just like, oh, I trust all people in bow ties. And you're just like, what is this person's backstory? It's so insane.
He comes on really strong with it, though. Yeah. Like, I have a policy, basically, is what he's saying. It's like, bow
yeah,
ties.
He's very confident about it. So you're like, oh, I guess he's probably right.
And then, of course, Eleanor, she's going to bail. She feigns that she needs a moment alone. She calls Janet and says, get me a train and load it to the brim with cocaine. Yeah.
Which is actually foreshadowing because that does happen.
It does happen.
Can we revisit that joke you were just talking about with the raised platform bed that she's been struggling to get over, just high enough to be absolutely annoying?
Yes.
And she spends a season on that. I don't remember what episode it's revealed and that there's the button there, but I was so impressed by Mike Schur on that. I said, how long have you been holding that? He says, oh yeah, I thought of that early on, the second or third episode. I said, there must have been moments where you needed a joke, and that it's a great one. You could have used it in the next episode, but he withheld and to get the bigger laugh.
That's strength, right? To keep your powder dry and go it'll be more powerful
it
later.
It really made me realize what we were dealing with.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in the pilot that's not going to come up till season 4. So just wait.
Right, that ability to think that far ahead. He's playing comedic chess. No?
Yes. Oh, I was like, cut my line. Maybe there is.
Matt, are there any continuity errors that we haven't noticed?
Thousands.
Real
upon thousands. Yeah.
Truly?
Yeah. I'm sure, yeah. I mean, there's, continuity can be like if someone's hand is here, you know, by their side, and then in the next shot, it's up by their head or whatever.
Yeah.
But we try not to let that change too much about the way we cut a scene. If someone is standing slightly off askew, as they were in the previous shot, most of the time people don't notice it if the performance is good.
That makes me think, we've spoken with David Niednagel on this podcast. You must coordinate with the visual effects team to sneak in things like Micah Kooning and all that sort of thing.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
How does that work?
You know, we'll do a cut of the whatever shot has the visual effect in, like your cocooning.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give that to David, and he'll do kind of a temp version of it at first. And then we'll cut it in and put that, either show that to the director or Mike. And
so I'm completely ignorant of all this stuff. Do you all work in the same application, the same?
The editors all work in Avid Media Composer.
Okay.
And then David, I believe, works in Maya, which is a visual effects program. Okay. And we pull for him like the really high-res files, and he works off of those for when he does his work.
But eventually they come back to you and you...
They do, yeah. And then we like bring them back into Avid and then put them in our cut.
And then it all gets delivered somehow at some point as a final?
Yes, yeah. They online it, and I'm not too involved with that process. The assistant editors put a lot of the final pieces in because at that point the cut's totally locked and nothing about the timing changes in the episode, and they're usually dropping in final elements.
And that's for the network, the 21 minute, 30-second version kind of thing?
Yes.
It's daunting. I can't imagine, like, you must have had to have cut canon-y things, things that would impact the show.
Yes. I don't know how to answer that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like I don't want your job, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess like for the continuity, also going back to David Niednagel, is that sometimes if there is like an opportunity to fix something where, you know, someone's hand is up by their head in one shot, we do split screens in the Avid and kind of do take one person's performance from one half of the screen, like if it's on the back of their head, and we'll cut in something that matches for when we cut back to them on the other side.
Wow.
And then David will do a nice version of that. Or they'll do it in... color correction.
Wow. Yeah.
Something I remember that was very important to the show that got cut was in the pilot, Eleanor originally calls Tahani a butthead, and there was an effect of switching Tahani's butt and head, and that never made it in. Oh. And I think...
But did it get made? Like, did it get drawn? And
I think it was too scary.
You saw a cut of that?
Yeah, with a very rough representation of the butthead.
Yeah, I think it was too freaky looking. you're in hell.
Finish, yeah. But like, you have to keep so many details in your head. And is that where they say, or do you keep a pad by you? I mean, you're playing 3D concentration. I mean,
it's just a void.
Because when I do, I edit too. And I in my head, I go, I got to do that. You know, I'm thinking 20 steps ahead to get to the point, and I don't want to lose the inspiration of it. Do you have a similar process?
Really, for me, it's just about the script most of the time. Like, I'm trying to capture what is so funny about the script, and do that by using the best performances from the cast, you know, because and sometimes they'll do improv or whatever. And,
Yeah,
I mean, that's like a big part of it. We have not a ton of improv in the show, but there is definitely improv or lines that are what we call alt lines, which are, you know, they write, writers do many versions of jokes or whatever. And the writer will be on set when they're shooting. So they'll go in and give the actors that line. And then we have all those various lines in our script that we cut with. So it's really just what feels like the best. But then sometimes that'll get changed out when Mike gets in the room or the director.
How did you keep track on Dance Dance Resolution?
Oh, that was Eric. But yeah, that was insane. Oh. He did an amazing job on that episode. It's an incredibly well-edited episode.
What does that mean to you? What is incredibly well-edited?
Well, okay, so there's this montage in that episode where of all of the resets. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you did an amazing job, David, also with the score. It's just like, it's it's brilliant. Like that is an Emmy-worthy episode for editing. What was the question again?
What does it mean to you that, like, when you watch television, like, you watch television different than I watch television.
Yeah.
I'm looking for gags and performances, and you're going, like, that glass was half full. Well, not just continuity. No, that's my question. Comedy, it's not just about continuity.
Yeah, no, it's all about pacing for me, I guess. And this has a lot to do with music also, I think, is that you try to build, like, a rhythm to the joke. And there's a lot of information, like, that gets... It sets up the joke or whatever, but you're always, like, for me at least, I'm trying to get through that kind of quickly so that the joke can hit in the best way.
So why are you good at comedy? What's your comedy background?
I started in Channel 101. It's basically a monthly comedy film festival where people make short films and screen them in front of a live audience, and the audience votes for which ones they want to see come back for another episode.
That's great. So that was your 10,000 hours. That was like boot camp on...
Kind of, yeah. I started there, and I met a lot of amazing people through that, and they kind of would get me small jobs or whatever, and I don't think anyone on the podcast will find this interesting, but I actually was working at Fox Digital Studio when...
I'll find it.
You would find that interesting. Yeah. I was working at Fox Digital Studio right as they were starting the show that you were on there.
I've done all of their shows. Okay. Which one was that?
It was the one that Jordan was directing.
Oh, Mashup.
Mashup,
Fox Fix.
Fox Fix, that was it.
Google it.
Google Fox Fix. this is a plug for Fox Fix. No, that I left right as that was starting.
That was me, Thomas Middleditch, Angela Trimber. Yeah. Was Kumail on that, I feel like?
I don't know if Kumail's on it.
Those are good dudes.
Oh, I love
They're great.
Show.
Yeah. It was a really fun show to work on.
No good place, certainly.
Nothing. There's really nothing like this show.
Well, I have a bunch more questions, but I think it'll have to wait for a different episode. David Schwartz, what's good? You were warned.
Well, I was thinking of other things, but I think everyone in this show is good and tries to be good. And I think it's a very interesting culture here. And I think that the show is sort of influencing us. And I'm a little bit better driver on the road because I think of what's good now. Because we're always, that's always the discussion. And it's not just purely intellectual. And I think it comes from Mike. And, you know, when I do go to, you know, when I was on the set, I saw a very happy set.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And so I'm not wrong.
Oh, you're right. No, and it's not a given.
It's not a given at all. And it can be done a lot of different ways, but I think this is a great way. And it feels that way in post. And it's just really a pleasure and a joy.
Matt Freund, what's good?
My wife is pretty good. No, she's truly good. Yeah, she's a great person.
Good
Borat?
Yeah. My wife.
We scream Borat whenever anyone says my wife.
My wife.
Oh, okay.
You recognize that you said pretty good.
Cut that out.
Okay.
take it back. Use this one.
We're using this whole thing.
No.
Oh, we're 100% using this whole thing.
Not, please.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the editor. We're not doing it. Lizzie Pace, what's good? You've had months.
They told me I was doing this today, by the way. I would say things that are good. Vanderpump Rules. It is a show about the worst people, and it is amazing. We always say in our room, like, monsters and idiots are, like, the most fun people to write, and they, like, literally write themselves. I highly recommend starting with season one if you are going to start it.
Is this a spinoff from, like, a Real Housewives kind of universe?
Yes, yeah. It is a spinoff of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. You don't need to watch it to watch Vanderpump. I would argue that it is...
I don't need to
far
watch
exceeded
any
it.
Of them.
You might say that, but literally on election night, I was like
forking,
sobbing. And I said to my friend, I was like, can we go watch Vanderpump Rules? And it's literally that is, it's a great thing for that.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Go do something good.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. And now to deliver our credit sequence is Bad Janet. Take it away, Bad Janet.
Whatever. If you enjoyed this podcast, which, like, how is that even possible? Please subscribe. It's available on all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't even know. Or if you don't want to subscribe, you can also just listen to your mom's butt, you fat dink. You burnt.
Why don't I handle the credits? The podcast is hosted by Mark Evan Jackson, produced by Grant Rutter.
Who?
It's written by Lizzie Pace, and the music is composed by David Schwartz.
David Schwartz. See you next time, nerds.